Tony Gosling. He's an investigative journalist, and he joins us via Skype from Bristol. Many thanks for joining us here on Press TV, Mr. Gosling. Now, I'd start off with the comments made by the Iranian Foreign Minister, Mohammad Javad Zarif, saying that not even 2 decades since the 9/11 attacks, the U.S. military is fighting on the same side as Al-Qaeda and Daesh in Yemen and Syria. What do you say to that?
Well, I can tell you that in the US military circles, these sorts of attacks have been being wargamed for decades. What we've got now is the possibility last night, because this is fascinating to hear, that ISIS were actually coordinating their ground attacks with this US cruise missile strike at 4 a.m. in the morning. Quite clearly, there is some kind of back communication between ISIS to coordinate this as a multi-faceted attack from different directions and different angles. That really is a betrayal that there is quite clear operational coordination between the United States and ISIS, whether it's through Israel or another party is not quite clear. But also there's a possibility, wasn't there last night, because we've been told that there were Russian personnel at Shayrat Air Base, that Russians could have been killed in this attack, in which case it would have been much more serious. I mean, I'm not saying it's not, because the Americans are actually dicing with an incredibly dangerous situation if they're attacking air bases where they know Russians are and that the Russians could be killed at the same time. So although there were 6 dead last night, I suppose we have to be very thankful that no Russians were killed. But if this sort of thing carries on and we're told it's a one-off, well, of course, it's not actually a one-off, because there's the Deir ez-Zor air base attack as well, which the Americans last time said was a mistake. So I think that's where we need to, focus on at the moment is to see this as something which is a coordinated attack between the Pentagon and ISIS.
All right. Let me bring in Mr. Joe Quinn. He's an editor and researcher for Salt.net, and he joins us via Skype from Paris. Many thanks for joining us here on Press TV, Mr. Quinn. Now, Mr. Gosling here doesn't believe that this was a one-off attack by the U.S. and that we're going to see similar such attacks being carried out against Syria. Do you see it that way, too?
Well, obviously, it's very hard to tell whether or not this is going to be a one-off attack or not. But if you look at the nature of the attack, and I mean, I think the Russians summed it up very well, that it was a pretty poor, from a military perspective, it was a pretty poor attempt. It wasn't a very well-planned, well-executed military attack. And I mean, that's by design, effectively, because Trump seems to have taken the approach here, in coordination with the Pentagon, to basically carry out a small-scale, low-level attack, very few people killed, infrastructure at the airbase not really damaged in any significant way. For example, the runway is still operational, and they knocked out maybe 5 or 6 40-year-old Syrian fighter jets. This isn't, by any standards, a serious blow to the Syrian military or to the Syrian military's capability in Syria and fighting the Western-backed terrorists. So whether or not there's going to be more on the basis of this attack, I would say that there probably won't be, or there may be 1 or 2 more small little attacks. But this seems to be a one-off attack in response to the kind of trumped-up claim that the Syrian government attacked its own people with chemical weapons a few days ago. This was obviously a fake war crime spread by the warmongers in the U.S. to try and justify a large-scale attack on Syria by the West, or by the U.S. in particular. And that hasn't happened. Trump hasn't responded in that way. He's acknowledged, obviously, that he had to do something in the face of this propaganda offensive
let's backtrack a bit. Mr. Gosling, I'd like to get your opinion on this. Let's not forget that before this chemical attack in Khan Sheikhoun in Idlib province, the U.S. had said that regime change in Syria was no longer its objective, that it was going to concentrate on fighting Daesh. It was also in talks about joining with Russia against that offensive of Raqqa. But at the same time, then we saw this chemical attack take place, allegedly being blamed on the Syrian government without any investigation, etc. The U.S. has conducted this strike. But the U.S. continues to insist that this does not indicate a shift in U.S. policy towards Syria. Is this a shift in policy towards Syria? And if so, then one has to wonder who is in control of the White House.
Well, look, it doesn't look like just a shift in policy. It looks to me like a U-turn in policy. So they've just swapped sides literally overnight. Now, they all say that, oh, well, we didn't mean to do that or whatever. But it does certainly look like a massive change in policy. And look, this is all based on a few news reports about this gas attack on Tuesday. There was this gas attack in 2013 at Ghouta. It took nearly a year for the various investigative journalists and the United Nations to decide that it was the rebels that were responsible for that attack. And yet, within a few hours, the media has decided who's done this attack on Tuesday. And within a few days, there's a military response to the media attack. Now, this is just not the way to do things. If you look at Seymour Hersh and Christoph Lehmann, who are both investigative journalists that pinned the blame for the Ghouta attack on the rebels, both very reputable, neither of them reported in the mainstream press at all. Seymour Hersh is in the London Review of Books talking about this. This is quite clearly a propaganda exercise. That's what it seems to me, in order to bounce politicians, the press, etc., into this sort of action. And we have to ask, who was it back in Ghouta that was supplying ISIS with chemical weapons? And the evidence is they were supplied through the US consulate in Benghazi by several people at the highest level involved in this, this is at least what Seymour Hersh has concluded, the chair of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Martin Dempsey, CIA Director John Brennan, and the Saudi Intelligence Chief, Prince Bandar, were all involved in that attack. Now, there has been no actual learning, it seems, anywhere in the Western mainstream press about what really happened back in Ghouta in 2013. And the idea is that we're just supposed to believe what the press tells us or doesn't tell us at the time, and afterwards as to who was responsible for that attack. So this is totally irresponsible, but it's part of a much wider, I think, a wider agenda, which is carrying on this regime change. If you remember back in 2001, we had Wesley Clark, the American general, being told by Donald Rumsfeld that after 9/11, there was going to be regime change in 7 countries in 5 years. And Syria was very much on that list, as was Iran, actually. And that does seem to be what's really going on here, is they want regime change all over the Middle East. Ultimately, this really only serves the interests of Israel. It doesn't serve the interests of the United States. There'll be many people in Britain and in the US saying, well, what is the point of trying to control countries in the Middle East? Why are we spending our taxpayers' money on this? Actually, these interests just serve the Israeli expansionist interests, because they want to balkanize the Middle East and they want to expand their territory, expand settlements, as we're seeing illegally. And I think that's really at the back of this. So we can focus on this one particular issue of the attack last night by the United States. But I think it's also important to take a step back and see how this fits in. The Americans have been planning this sort of attack in Syria. I mean, we were talking about it when I was school children, as possibly World War III might start in Syria. They've been planning it for decades.
Well, that's interesting to note. However, Mr. Quinn, I would like to touch up on the balance of power when it comes to Syria. We've had Russia playing a very prominent role, and its reaction has been quite forthcoming, saying it condemned the attack, saying it is against the international law, the sovereignty of a nation, also saying that it was an act of aggression. We then heard the Russian foreign minister saying that this was reminiscent of the 2003 invasion of Iraq, which was done without a UN mandate. And we also have the Security Council, the Russian Security Council meeting with President Putin, stepping up Syria's air defenses and also suspending the Syria air safety agreement. Can we see a standoff between Russia and the U.S. over Syria?
Well, there has been a standoff between Russia and the U.S. over Syria for the past few years, but it's been at a low level and it's been kept under wraps. I don't think we're going to see the situation escalating to the point where, as many people have been talking about over the past few years, where you're going to have World War III and nuclear war between Russia and the US. That's not going to happen. This is being played out at the level of kind of proxy wars and kind of behind the scenes, effectively. And since Donald Trump has come in recently, things have changed up a little bit, and there's a lot of issues between Trump's change in position towards Syria, towards Russia, and he's fighting that battle back in the US. But of course, the US has no regard for international law whatsoever. And one of the major problems with the past few years in Syria, vis-a-vis the US and Russia and Russia's involvement in Syria, is that the America's reputation as the world's preeminent military power has taken a serious beating at the hands of Russia because of what it's done in Syria. Now, the war hawks in the US understand that a lot of America's power to act around the world comes from its reputation as the world's most powerful military force in the world. Now, they want to get that back. They want to recoup some of that reputation. And I think this attack was Trump's offering to them, effectively, to restore a little bit of American military prowess. But as we've seen, it didn't go down very well. And I think the Russian analysis of the situation of this attack last night in Syria is quite accurate, that it was very poor, and they fired these missiles from a long way up the Mediterranean, and many of them didn't reach their targets. So it hasn't really gone very well for the Americans in that respect. But I don't expect to see any serious confrontations between Russia and the US at the level of the two nations. Overt war between the two nations in the near future is going to continue on, but I think the US will continue to lose this kind of low level, low intensity war, because they are being repeatedly outsmarted by Russia and by Syria and by Iran, because these countries, it's their backyard, it's in their region. America is 5,000 miles away to the west. What are they can't maintain any significant forces in that part of the world because their base of operations is so far away, and they shouldn't be there. This is a case of the refrain of Yankee go home that has been around for so many years as a result of US interventions in many countries. So they finally, maybe America will understand that that phrase, Yankee go home, is what most people in the world really want. Go back to where you're from and stay out of world affairs, especially world affairs in areas of the world that where you have no, you should have no interest, or you certainly have no right to have an interest.
Okay. Mr. Glossing, do you agree with Mr. Quinn's opinion there that we will not see a direct confrontation between the U.S. and Russia over Syria?
Look, the United States, I've got some very bad news for him. The United States is not going home soon. They've got military bases completely surrounding Iran and all over the Middle East. They've also got them, by the way, surrounding China. And they have no intention of giving up on this attempt to intimidate all the superpowers, including Russia. It seems that this is what happens when you have a dying empire, is that they can see their power slipping away, and so they get even more aggressive as a result. Look, there's a whole other aspect to all of this, and that is the money that's made from war. Last night we heard that there were 59 cruise missiles. Do you know how much that costs? Around about $100 million worth of cruise missiles. Some company is now going to get another order to replace those missiles. And what bothers me is that there's far too many people involved in the political system in the West who have connections to the arms industry and making money out of war. For example, Philip May, Theresa May's husband, works for this company, Capital Group, in Los Angeles, who are a major investor in Lockheed Martin. They are hundreds of millions of pounds invested in this trade. This is extremely dangerous when you've got people who are effectively arms lobbyists right next to the people at the very top of politics, making these political end of this, what is effectively a military decision. But we do have some opposition here in the United Kingdom. It's good to see the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, coming out very strongly against this attack last night, saying, quite rightly, this is just going to cause more mayhem. Really, we don't need another Iraq-type situation, which we created back in 2003. And look, don't forget that back in 2003, the Arab League called it right. I remember seeing on the BBC News website, just for a few hours, they changed the headline. The headline where the Arab League was saying that if you invade Iraq, you will open the gates of hell. Someone at the BBC obviously then decided this is a little bit too shocking a headline, so they removed it. But that's effectively what they've been doing in the Middle East. And I just think that this is the ultimate cause here is that you've got people who are making money from the use of these weapons, munitions, etc., far too close to power in the West. It's something we get no real reporting of in the media here at all. There is Andrew Feinstein, the former South African politician, has written a really good book all about the global arms trade. We don't see very much of him. And I think that's another thing which is really fueling these kinds of what seem on the surface to be a crazy thing to do, but there are some people that make money at doing this.
All right, Mr. Quinn, also when we look at what is to come ahead, the UN, of course, Security Council is supposed to hold a meeting over this at the request of Russia. Once the attack in Idlib took place, that chemical attack, we did hear the UN Special Envoy for Syria say, whenever we are close to peace, someone somewhere does something to thwart those efforts. Do you think that the recent course of events will force that peace effort to go, to double down, to gain fresh impetus, or is that broken down?
Well, I think the UN has been neutered in terms of its peacemaking efforts by the warmongers in the US and in Western Europe. So no, the UN isn't going to hasn't been effective for many years, and isn't going to be effective in the future because the UN is dominated by the members of the Security Council. So it's what the UN's power to act is determined by this conflict effectively between the West and the East, between China, Russia, European nations, and the USA. So no, I don't think the UN is going to have any effect. But I agree with your other guest on the arms manufacturers' interest in this. Obviously, war is an end in itself in terms of it generating massive profits. You drop bombs, and arms manufacturers make lots of money. But one thing that they cannot accept, and which nation states, particularly nation states like the USA, cannot accept, is ever being defeated. That's why we have not seen any direct military action from the US in Syria. Because if the US were to fly, or NATO were to fly their airplanes, their warplanes across Syria, they would run a very high risk of being shot down. And that is one thing that they do not want to accept. And it goes back to my point previously, which is that the US's reputation and its influence or its power to act in the world is based to a large extent on its reputation as this invincible military power. So it can never accept the situation where the whole world would see American jets being shot down over Syria or any other country in the world.
Okay, we're going to have to leave it there for now. Unfortunately, we've run out of time. That's editor and researcher with SOT.net, Joe Quinn, joining us live via Skype from Paris. Joining us via Skype from Bristol was Tony Gosling, investigative journalist. Gentlemen, thank you very much indeed for weighing in with your thoughts and analysis